Coffee Talk. That's what's coming up on the Art of Bombing, episode 184.
My friend Dan, he's got a podcast, cause all comics need a podcast, and nobody had a podcast called The Art of Bombing. So Dan went out and bought a tape deck. Who knows why he bought a tape deck? Podcasts don't get played on tape decks, but Dan is from the 80s. So hey there, all you funny jerks, come talk to Dan about your work. Tell him all about your worst times. It's The Art of Bombing.
Welcome to a brand new episode of The Art of Bombing. Dan Bublich Jr. here with you on Tuesday, January 5th, 2021. That's right, it is the first episode of the new year. And today I am joined by Zach Lyman, and we had a great conversation. We talked about comedy festivals and marketing yourself and a whole bunch of other stuff. It was a great conversation. So that's what's coming up on today's episode. Before we get to that, let's handle a little bit of business we got to take care of. If you're on the Facebook page, or if you get the newsletter, which came out yesterday, and if you don't get the newsletter, you can sign up for the newsletter at artofbombingpod.com/contact. But if you're on either of those things, and you probably heard that we're doing a contest called March Bombness in the spirit of March Madness. We're on the search for the ultimate bombing story. It's a contest where it'll be, like I said, the March Madness style. It'll be a tournament bracket situation where the worst bombing stories will go head to head, and the listeners will get to vote to see who wins. And ultimately, the ultimate winner will win a $50 gift card, and they'll be able to be a guest on the podcast to talk about that particular bomb. So that's pretty cool. There's two ways that you can register and find out more about this contest. And just a heads up, if you've already been a guest on the podcast, you're not eligible. This is for comics that have not been on the podcast yet. So if you're eligible, all you need to do is go to artofbombingpod.com/contest, and you can either fill out the form, or if you want to be more fun with it and you want to tell the story yourself and have that audio played on a future episode, you can call the Art of Bombing Bomb Squad hotline and leave a voice message. The number for that is 651-212-5376. Now, just keep in mind, it is a voice recording. It's going to go right to voicemail, and you only have 3 minutes. So if your story is longer than 3 minutes, you're going to need to call back, because like I said, there's only 3 minutes, so make sure you keep that in mind when you're recording it. And if you call in, be sure to say your name and where you're from, and then tell your story. And like I said, we're going to have a fun contest. It's going to be a pretty cool thing. Another thing we're doing is I'm looking to see what your favorite episode of the podcast was, and you can fill out the best of form by going to artofbombing.com/best of form and fill that out. Give us a little feedback. We would appreciate it. And I think just about done with all of the business here. And again, now, this is a new year, and because it is a new year, and I made this announcement last week, we are part of Dead and Mellow. We are just a little behind on that, though. We're going to make the full transition this week. So next week's episode will be fully under the Dead and Mellow banner. What does that mean? It doesn't really mean a whole lot to you guys. Nothing should change on your end. It's just, I'm going to be part of a network, and I'm going to have more resources to hopefully help grow the podcast. But that transition should be coming in the next week or so. Make sure you go check out our YouTube channel, Art of Bombing Podcast. I am releasing clips with bombing stories from the comedians from the podcast. So there's a lot of great stories. If you want to just check out the bombing stories, you can go do that. Look for the bomb drops. I'm doing some other stories as well with that. I've also been kicking around the idea of bringing back the Between Bombs mini episodes. If you're interested in that, if you're interested in those podcasts and you'd like something covered on those mini episodes, shoot me an email to theartofbombingpod@gmail.com with a suggestion of what you'd like covered, or you can hit us up on Facebook Messenger or tweet at us, Art of Bombing Pod. Any of those methods are a good way to let us know what you want me to talk about on the Between Bombs mini episodes. And if you're an avid fan of the show, you probably know what those are. If you're not an avid fan of the show and you have not listened to a Between the Bombs episode, last year, end of 2018, early 2019, I was doing mini episodes where I was doing comedy tips. I did like 6 episodes and then kind of let it fall to the wayside. Or I should say the wayside. I don't know. Is it wayside or wayside? I really don't know. But either way, I only did 6 episodes, and I'm thinking about bringing it back on a more regular situation. So that's what that is all about. There's some great episodes. We did one on producing live shows, putting together EPKs. We did one on goals, you know, being positive, a whole bunch of different things. I think most of those are available at the website, artofbombingpod.com, or you can go to our YouTube, and there's some videos of those as well. So check those out. All right, like I said, I think the last thing I want to talk about is it is 2021, which means 2020 wrapped up, and I did the big Facebook post with the most downloaded episodes of 2020. I'm not going to go through that whole top 10 list here. I'm just going to name the top 3 on here. If you want to see the rest of the list, go to our Facebook page. But coming in number 1 for 2020 was Brian McDaniel, which great episode. And if you remember, if you've listened to that episode, you know, or if you've seen the pictures, Brian and I look like we could be brothers. We look very similar. In fact, there's a funny story that I told on that podcast when he was on about how I saw a picture of him and thought it was me. So that's cool. Check that out. Coming in number 2 was Sioux Falls comedian Cole Bovey. Another great episode. Not sure if he's still doing comedy. I think he's off of social medias these days. And then number 3 was Eric Helwig, a.k.a. Def. That was another fun episode. And so those are the top 3. I did a whole top 10. Those are available, like I said, on the Facebook page. All right, now everything else for the Art of Bombing, you know you need to go to theartofbombingpod.com, subscribe, make sure you are liking and sharing our content on social media. I'd appreciate it if you'd leave a 5-star rating and a review wherever you listen to this podcast, although I think you can only leave the reviews on Apple Podcasts and Podchaser. So if you use either of those, I can appreciate a review. That would be awesome of you. All right, I think that's going to do it for this little intro of me being all... All right, that's enough of that BS, right? All right, let's get into this episode. Here's my conversation with Zach. Enjoy!
And now, it's time for the stand-up soundbite.
I one time got a car towed, and this is why I got towed. I lost the keys and I just said, eh. I just left it there. They're like, where, Zach? I'm like, somewhere in Goodyear. Somewhere. Another reason I didn't go back is because I was like, I don't know, which street was it? Which abandoned house did I leave this in front of? And then I got a letter and it was very aggressive. I don't know if you've ever gotten a letter from the police when they're like, hey, we got your car. It'll be $347 to get it out. And I was like, no. That's your car now. A gift.
What made you move to St. Paul after California?
Well, I'd moved back to South Dakota for a little while.
Okay.
After living in California, because I moved back because I wanted to work the road, and it was more practical living in the Midwest to do that than living on one of the coasts. So that was a lot of why I moved back, because I felt like I reached my peak in Southern California as far as like, I didn't feel like I was going to be able to develop much more because there's only so much stage time. And even if you get up to headliner, you know, on the West Coast, most of them are showcase shows. A headliner spot's like 15 minutes, maybe 20 if you're lucky, you know, sometimes a half hour.
Yeah.
So there wasn't a lot of room to like grow and develop. So I wanted to work the road to do that. So that's how I ended up back in South Dakota.
That's funny. I just was on a podcast talking about that, about they were asking me same thing of like why I moved back to Phoenix after moving around a bunch. And I was like, it's a great place to get stage time and then able to like kind of hit the road from and like be cheaper rent than living anywhere else.
Yeah. So. I actually have a couple friends that live in that area now. A friend just moved there actually a few months ago. My friend Jordan Parker, who you probably haven't met him yet because with comedy being all weird or whatever, but he started comedy in San Diego and then he moved to Oklahoma for a little bit because his parents were out there, but now he lives in Phoenix.
Okay.
Just moved a couple months ago. So
Yeah. Well, yeah. If he needs any advice on mics or anything like that, just have him hit me up.
Yeah. I'll have to do that. I don't know how much he's, because is Phoenix open right now? I know every state's different, so it's like hard to keep up.
Kinda. Yeah, it's like hit or miss. Like, you know, we had that one moment where they were like closed everything for like a weekend. And then, but lately the numbers are still really growing here, like high. And but like the government hasn't been like, yeah, everything's, you know, they're just like, yeah, I don't know, business as usual, you know.
Okay. So like you could go do mics and stuff.
There's probably like two mics, three mics I can think of versus what it used to be.
Yeah. So it's one of them situations where people in comedy are trying to be responsible and just not have the mics.
Yeah.
And then there's some that are like, well, we don't care, we're going to do it. Yeah. But there's no like government mandates.
Yeah, there's a lot of people just being like, hey, I'm just going to not. But then there's also clubs that are like doing an amazing job of being like, well, if you want to, we're going to check your temperature and do all the, you know, we're going to like really go hard. And then, yeah. And then, of course, there's the sprinkle of people that are like, I don't know, man, business as usual. Show up if you want to. Like, you know, there's certain mics that are like that where you're like, oh, OK, interesting.
Yeah, you definitely see that. They've been pretty good in Minnesota when we were open. Now we just closed everything back down, but
that's right.
When we were open. Yeah. When we were open, you know, there was a lot of, you know, reduced capacity, you know, sanitizing mics and, you know, trying to take the socially distanced, you know, seating and stuff like that, but still you never know with it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like Seattle where like comedy is like illegal, you know?
Well, it sounds like it's practically, or was for a while, practically illegal in California, too.
Yeah. Yeah. It really seems like it's pretty strict across the country.
Yeah. It's like almost reminds you of Prohibition days where now you got to like go to the speakeasy to do comedy. Like it's an underground thing.
You're like, are you sure this place is safe? And then they're like opening a bookcase and they're like, yeah, it's fine.
Come on in. Yeah, that's pretty much it for comedy now. People are doing it in like backyards and people's basements. And I mean, they were doing it like that, you know, before, but even more so now.
Yeah, I was making that joke where I was like, all these people that are learning like very like anyone that was like very club comedy or something. And I'm like, now they're like asking me advice, like when you put together backyard shows.
Like, you know, like, how did Yep. Like, what exactly did that take? Yeah. I seen a friend of mine from San Diego. He just released a special on Amazon that it was all backyard. He filmed it doing. He did a bunch of backyard shows and then filmed a special in a backyard. And the set and everything is really cool. I mean, they did a good job of the set and making it look really good. I haven't personally had a chance to check it out yet because it just came out on Thanksgiving, but it looks, you know, the quality and everything, whoever filmed it, they did a great job because it looks good.
That's great. That's all that matters is like, you just got to get 4K footage of your stage time, you know, if it's a special or not, it just needs to be.
So it just needs to be the best.
Yeah, it just needs to be good quality so you can put it on the internet, you know?
Yeah, pretty much. That's for sure. That's what during this, you know, downtime, that's what I've been doing a lot of is I've been scrubbing old material or scrubbing through my old videos to see what I can and can't use to like make clips for Instagram and TikTok and things like that. So
yeah.
It's been it's been good for that because it's forcing me to do stuff that I wouldn't. And then I get to watch some videos and where I'm like, oh, that was terrible. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. I've been doing a lot of that too, of just, I really, last year, my whole focus was to write like the best hour I could. And then this year I was going to like film that hour. And I was like, mm-hmm. I had like a bunch of road gigs set up and I was going to film those. And so now I'm like writing a new hour again. So I'm like, by the time we hit the road, it has to be the best hour I've ever written. You know, it's like 2 hours together. Like,
yeah, right. If you can't, you should be able to get one good hour out of 2 hours.
yeah, exactly. I was like, I better be able to cobble something together.
Yeah, for sure. Totally. Well, let's get into this. Like I said, this is the Art of Bombing. So the first thing I like to do is hear your story of a time where you felt like you had a bad show or you bombed really bad.
Oh, man. I was thinking about this for the last 2 days, like really being like, which terrible story do I want to share? Which, and it occurred to me today, like one that I like really buried in my memory was I was traveling and I was in Louisville, Kentucky, and it was the first time I've ever done stand up there. And I actually just moved there. So I just moved to Louisville and I was checking out the open mic at the comedy club and the only club there. And I sign up for the open mic. It's like 4 minutes of stand up and I was like third. And I get on stage and I immediately open, which is kind of like riffing of being like, yeah, I'm new here. I'm from Phoenix. You know, it's hot there. You know, just kind of like, yeah, this is who I am. And then I moved into a bit talking about how like I really liked that like in Phoenix, when we build freeways, we hire like teams, you know, and we have engineers. But like in Louisville, they're just like, yeah, anyone with a truck can just come help us put together the freeway. And as soon as I like get into the idea of like making fun of their freeways, a lady stood up and started being like, fuck you. This is terrible. This is, you can't say this, you know, and like very aggressively being like, no, you know, and I was like, and just, and then they're booing at me and I was being booed and heckled and I'm like 1 minute into stand up. And so I'm 1 minute in, and then by minute three, it's just like complete chaos to the point that I was like, yep, I'm done. And I just like put the mic in. But then I had to like, then I like didn't want to leave right away and be that guy. So I just kind of like hung out for a minute and I watched the host go up and be like, that was the worst stand up I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, geez.
He told me to my, he looked me in the eyes and said, you should go kill yourself after this.
Wow. What a jerk.
And then the following comedians also had to kind of be like, yeah, that last guy, right? And then, you know, like, he just were just like for the rest of the night, like, yeah, yeah. So I just moved there and this is like my introduction to their comedy scene.
Oh my God. Your first impression.
Yeah. So for the next 3 weeks, I just laid on the couch asking my girlfriend at the time, I'm like, if I go to this other open mic, do you think they'll be there? Do you think, they'll remember me? That's like got a bomb so hard.
Has it been long enough that they'll forget who I was? I can start over.
Yeah. And I was like, also, I don't know this scene. I'm like, is it just like that every night? You know, like, is it just, is it one of those where they're just like, they attack everyone and they're
right,
just like,
oh, very rowdy. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I was like, I didn't know what I was getting into. So that was, that's probably the worst bombing story. Wow.
Like, so what brought you to Louisville then? You said you moved around a little bit. Why were you moving around? Was it because of comedy or something else? Or
definitely not comedy.
I'm just curious. Oh, okay. I was just curious.
Yeah. I was following my girlfriend at the time. I was in a long-term relationship with her. And, funny enough, I was working at a company. And when I was like talking to them about like me kind of like leaving and being like, yeah, I'm thinking of moving. They were like, well, we're actually opening a location there. We'll give you a promotion if you move.
Oh, and so wow. It was kind of like, it just worked out.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, I'm going to make way more money. And then also, like, I can go to all these new comedy scenes I've never been to. And so it just kind of was like, yeah, I'll try this out for some years. And she was just finishing up college there. So I was like, we're only going to be there for a bit. And yeah, that's what it ended up being, was just, you know, 4 years in Kentucky. And then I was like, yeah, I'll go back to Phoenix.
Yeah. Yeah. That's sometimes, that's kind of, I mean, that's what I brought me to San Diego, was I was in a relationship and she wanted to move back because she grew up there. So, you know, yeah, she had family and stuff there. And that's kind of how I got. And I was glad I was, because I was already thinking about moving to California, you know, like to move to LA and be a comedian, you know, all this stuff. Like, mm-hmm. I remember thinking, like, after 6 months of comedy, you know, being in comedy, I'm like, yeah, I'm ready to go to LA and make it big, you know. And then I ended up in San Diego, and just watching some of the guys in San Diego, I went, before I actually did an open mic, I just went and watched some shows and some of the open mics, and I was like, yeah, I suck. I was like, watching these guys just destroy, and I'm like, yeah, I don't know anything about comedy. Excuse me. So it's pretty much like a good lesson.
Yeah. That's so funny, because I felt Louisville and Phoenix, both those cities have the same problem of it's impossible for it to get insanely big, maybe, mm-hmm. because like Phoenix, you get really good and people go, well, LA's down the street. And then when you're in Louisville, you do like two open mics and you're like a couple hours of Chicago. So like, what am I doing here? You know?
Oh,
so it's
yeah,
just very
yep.
like that mindset of like, yeah, I'm just leaving soon. Like, yeah.
Yep.
And
yep,
I can see that. I also felt that way when I did comedy in Phoenix. I was only like, I did it for like 4 years, and then I moved to Louisville. And when I moved to Louisville, it was like a real wake up call of like just different sense of humor. Like in Phoenix mm-hmm. at that time was very like dark humor and very like very dark, edgy stuff. And then like Louisville was very more like family friendly, kind of like club comedy, like quick to the jokes, not mm-hmm. so spending so much time being like alty, long yep. story form or out of the box or something. So like Phoenix was very alt at that time. And then I moved to Louisville and it was just like, oh, I'm very out of the norm here.
Like, yeah. Yeah, well, and that's one of the nice things about working the road too, because you know there's a lot of differences in like you know different regions and stuff, you know, even you know the aspect of like the West Coast versus East Coast versus yeah. the Midwest, you know that kind of thing. Like I remember, you know, living in California for a while and being able to do fine at a show in California and then take mm-hmm. that material out on the road, and some of it just didn't work good because it wasn't funny to, you know, an area yeah. where you got, you know, the Bible Belt, more conservative people, that kind of thing, versus a more liberal state, which, you know, California was. You could get away with a lot more.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how I felt, like touring, where it's like, I always said it this way of like your set, you think you know your big jokes, like where the big mm-hmm. pops are. And then you'll be at a random club or bar or whatever in the middle of nowhere. And it's like the opposite ones hit, where like your weak jokes are all of a sudden your big laughs. And you're just like very like, it can take you off guard sometimes where you're like, yep. wait, you guys really loved that? Like, yep. yeah.
And then so it gets strange. Confusing because you're expecting that big laugh from the joke that kills every time. And then that one time it doesn't. And you're like, what do I do?
Yeah.
Why are they not laughing? This is the part in the script where they laugh.
Yeah.
Like, this is where the applause break was supposed to be. It's yeah. in my set. I wrote it there.
I did it yesterday just fine. So I know it's you guys. Like yep. yesterday went well. Tomorrow's gonna go well. I don't know what's going on with you guys right now.
yep. That definitely happens, especially when you're out on the road. And it's interesting too, because like you were talking about having the opposite effect where the jokes that you have that aren't necessarily strong hit and it confuses you. But that same thing happens when one of your best jokes doesn't hit and it hits man. Any other, you know, it's like 9 times out of 10 it hits. And then that one time it doesn't, you're just so confused. Like you don't even know what to do. Cause then it's yeah. kind of awkward because you're waiting for that laugh and you're waiting for that applause break. And you're just like, And then it doesn't come, and it's like, okay, well, I better move on.
Yeah. That's like going back to the bonding story was like, I do remember like me trying to like finishing out with like, clearly I was like, let's move to the like closing heavy hitter jokes. I'm no longer just, you know, I need to win this crowd over. And they're just like, nope. No.
They decided they didn't like you when you said you were from Phoenix.
Yeah, they're immediately like,
I just moved here from Phoenix, and they're like, oh, fuck this guy.
No. We didn't approve of this.
It's funny how people get kind of territorial about like stupid things like that. Like how like you can, if you say you just moved from somewhere, people are like, well, you're not from here. You're an outsider. So they automatically dismiss you.
Yeah. There's a lot of that. I had cause like when I like go on tour or stuff, I will check like online and see if there's like, if I'm a day early for a show, there's an open mic, I'll pop into an open mic. And like, that's also like a fun thing that I like is like when you show up to like another scene's open mic, and they just go, well, obviously you're new here. And then maybe someone's like, let me show you the ropes. And then also I my entire life I've looked like I'm 12. So like when I'm like not shaved or whatever, they're like, this is clearly your first time. They're like walking through and like, when I say 3 minutes, that's it. You know, and you're like, okay. Right.
This is the light. Do not run it.
You know, I'm just like, yeah, totally. You know, and I like keeping up that idea, because then when I do my stand up and I'm like, if it goes well, great. They're like, this guy's a natural. But if I do bad, they're just like, well, you know, he's trying. You know, it's like his first time. And
like, that's a good way to look at it.
Yeah. I just go, yeah, no, totally. My first time. Yep. And then,
and they're like, yeah, I can. And you're right. I definitely see that too. Like, I seen that too with moving too. I compare it to, it's like changing high schools when you move from a big scene to another big scene. You know, like I said, I lived in San Diego for a while. Then I moved back to South Dakota, and surprisingly, there's a good scene in Sioux Falls. It's a small scene, but it's a good scene. Like the comics are good, and they're not very competitive with each other. So they're very, it's more of a team thing. Whereas a lot of other bigger scenes,
that's good.
Everybody's kind of out for themselves, you know. You got little cliques and stuff. Well, they are the whole clique because they're not very many, you know, that kind of thing. But then I moved to the Twin Cities, and it's like, it would exactly like moving to a new high school. Like, I'm the new guy, and it's the same thing. You go to an open mic, and people are just like, they're just like, oh, this is a new guy. I wonder how they're going to be or whatever. Some people might be nice and, you know, try to show you the ropes or whatever. And some are just like, oh, great, another new guy.
As soon as you go up, they're like, I'm going to drink. I'm not even going to.
I'm not even going to pay attention.
what was that club that was in Sioux Falls for a minute?
Wackos?
Wackos. I almost closed a deal with Wackos, and I almost had a weekend booking at Wackos, and then I lost it to Carlos Mencia.
Oh wow.
Back and forth emails of like with the booker, and he's like, yeah, this date sounds good. And I'm like, yeah. And we're like, and then like when it got to like really confirming it, it was like silent. And then I was like checking the website every once in a while and be like, is that date filled? And then, and then Carlos Mencia's picture pulled up, and I was like,
well, definitely can't compete with that. they were only open for a year. So, pretty short lived. But, you know, now there's Boss's Comedy Club in Sioux Falls, and they've been doing pretty decent as far as staying open. I mean, they've been open for 2 or 3 years now, so.
Oh, nice.
Which is good. And they just moved from the location they were in to basically now they work out of a hotel, you know, situation.
That's a great idea.
But it's great because now they get a lot more walk-up traffic than they did before. You know, the location they were at before, it was on a main street, but not where there's like a lot of foot traffic, you know? So like, you're not going to necessarily get a lot of walk-ins, you know, where now, you know, they get a lot more walk-ins because they're at the, in the hotel, you know.
Yeah. Well, that's like, you know, owning a club is a dangerous game. You know, it's just such a balance and it's so hard. So like the older I get, the more and more I like understand the decisions that are made, because it's just like, what do you do with all that time that's not a comedy show? You know, those, you have like 2 hours of comedy shows a mm-hmm. night mm-hmm. and then it's like the other 22 hours a day. You still have maybe lights on here and there. You still have AC
security.
Going. You still have them. Yeah, you still have all of these things that are adding up.
Yep, that overhead is still there.
Yeah, it's yep. insane. You know, like one of my favorite venues here, it's a music venue. They just turned into like a coffee shop during the day. And like, that's how they're like getting through this. And it's like a very nice coffee shop. But I was like, I wish they were doing this from the beginning, because I love hanging out here. It's a very nice venue, very mm-hmm. good seating. And it's like got a really nice bar. And I'm like, yeah, everyone should just be a coffee shop during the day. It's my opinion.
But that would be a really good idea for a comedy club. Because yeah. that, you know, because comics, a lot of comics like hanging out at coffee shops during the day to write anyway, you yeah. know.
That's my
and
whole
so
life.
Like, you know, a lot of clubs want comics to hang out too. So like, if they were a coffee shop, more comics would hang out during the day. They'd always be there hanging yeah. out.
The booker could walk out to the lobby and be like, hey, Greg, are you free on Thursday?
Yeah, no, exactly. You're absolutely right. They could. Yeah. You know, a lot of comedy clubs have bars and sometimes, you know, restaurants or whatever that they'll be open, but mm-hmm. that coffee shop I like that idea. I really like all that. Because I'm biased to coffee and writing at coffee shops, but
yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, my whole life is like coffee. So coffee and comedy.
I'm pretty much the same, coffee and comedy. I do like to have some beer now and again, but yeah. when it comes to like hanging out, I would rather hang out in a coffee shop all day than a bar. So
yeah, I also go to coffee festivals, and I've performed at a couple of coffee festivals.
Oh, really? Okay, so yeah, I'm not that into coffee.
Yeah, it's just like, it's like, the people that go to events like that, you can assume are like the type of people we would hang out with. You know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
So it's like the first time I ever went to one, I'm like, oh, this is just my audience. Like 100%. So then when I did a couple of shows with like coffee festivals, they were like, yeah, this is great. This is. And so it's kind of like a thing that I've like kept up over the years. And so now like 4 times a year, I go to like a coffee festival. So,
oh, that's awesome. Where do those take place? Like, where all have you went to go do those?
Oh man, they move, but they try to cover all of the United States. So it's like, that's why it's 4 times a year. Mm-hmm. But I've been to like tons of different ones, but the main one, Coffee Fest, that I go to, like is like, let's say it's like New York, and then it might be like in like Portland, and then maybe it'll be like in Atlanta. Or like, you know, Seattle or something. So it's kind of like it moves around.
So it's a traveling thing. Okay.
Kind of. Yeah. Yeah. But it's like, you know, like the Portland one, I've gone to the Portland one twice, you know, so it's like, mm-hmm. okay, yeah, Portland again. We're just, you know, they kind of change the different expos, you know, so. But yeah, it's like 4 times a year. And it's very interesting. And then there's like bigger ones, like SCA is like a huge one that's like mm-hmm. worldwide, and it's like held mostly in Seattle and then like in New York sometimes, but that's like where it takes over like the whole city, it feels like.
Oh, so wow.
It's like, those are like, SCA is like massive. So
I'm sure. Yeah. Cause I suppose that's where I suppose a lot of like people that are in that industry are going to try to either sell their coffee or look for new coffee, like that kind of thing. Equipment and things like that.
Equipment is big. And so like SCA is like people from around the world being like, here's my roaster that we build in Turkey. Let me show you it here, you know, and mm-hmm. it's stuff like that. So it's like very like high end, like everything you possibly need, like Dutch Brothers is going there, Black Rifle is going there, you know, all these like major coffee companies are like hanging around at SCA. So
That's cool. And you said you got to perform at a couple of them. Did you just reach out to the people and
yeah,
say, hey, I'm a comedian like, and I'm gonna be there?
I become good friends with like the people that run Coffee Fest. So it's kind of like, at first I was just like, I was speaking there and I was doing like speaking engagements about like marketing and like how to grow your Instagram or, you know, like things like that, and just being like fun with it. And I'm like, yeah, but it's not like stand up, you know? So like, I was like trying to like ease in the idea of like, yeah, you have these after hour parties or like you have these side events that are like happening at night, where like all the baristas go to like this one bar or all the, you know. So I was like, how do I get involved with that more? And so the last couple of coffee fests were like almost like trial runs of that, where it's like, okay, we're going to have this latte art competition where tons of people are going to come, and it's for like a good amount of money they're going to win. So, you know, like everyone's involved. And then we're going to have a couple rounds and then a break where we're going to have stand up, and then it's going to go back to a couple of rounds. And I really liked that one. That one was great because you already have everyone in one place doing the thing, and then they just have to look to their left where I'm on a stage. And then it's just like, I do stand up, and then it's like, all right. And I did like 25 minutes or something, 20 or 30 minutes. And that, there was like a host, and it was great. It was great. And then the other one was like kind of like an after party thing too, where it was just like at a coffee shop after hours. Mm-hmm. And there was just like everyone hanging out, having a party. And then they're like, yeah, live comedy, here you go. So
right on. Now, yeah. With the, you said you were doing some speaking engagements as far as like marketing and stuff goes. Excuse me, my voice is being weird. Do you do that a lot, like speaking engagements for marketing and things like that? And have you mixed humor in with that?
Yeah. Yeah. It's very much like I give hard advice about like, these are things that are extremely important and let me get that across. And then I'm like, I like say a topic, and then I'll tell like a story that's usually fun or funny or whatever. And it's just is a story that relates to that I like did something in marketing that relates to that. Because like in the last, my day job for the last like 10 years has basically been in marketing on and off. So it's like, you know, just kind of applying that. And then like I started speaking at Coffee Fest for a job that I was working at. And then I left that job and I was like, can I still speak here? And they're like, yeah, that's great. So like, when I became like full-time comedian, they were like, yeah, of course, you still know things. So
yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, because that's something I find marketing very interesting. I'm actually going to school. I'm about to graduate with my associate's degree in marketing because it was something. Well, thank you. That's something I realized very valuable to know marketing when it comes to comedy and a lot of comics. I feel like they're missing out by not knowing that, because you have to be able to market yourself and go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say that was like a real wake up call, was like when I was younger and then like going to comedy clubs and realizing that I'm not the good fit for this, where I'm like, I'm not going to be the guy, you know, maybe ever. I don't know if I'll ever be the guy that they're like, we have to have Zach Lyman this weekend because he's a riot and he's like the type of comedy that sells here, you know? I never knew if I was going to be that fit, and I definitely wasn't in the beginning. I was very like alty, weird ideas. And so then I was like, I have to build my own audience and I have to bring them to a music venue. And that's how I got into marketing. What is, I was like learning how to like make flyers. And then it just led down this like rabbit hole of like, how do I market on Twitter, you know, at that time. And then like moved into all the social medias. And then once I got the hang of it, I started like working with like really small businesses and being like, you know, cause then they have a budget that you could play with, where they're like, even if it's something small, where they're like, we only spend $500 a month on ads. And you're like, well, that's $500 I didn't have before to like play with ads. So then I was like working at small businesses and like figuring out how what gets them sales and stuff. And then I moved through like different types of businesses. And then I always loved coffee. My first job ever was in coffee. So it was always like me trying to get back to like, how do I do this for people in coffee? So it's like something fun. But always at the same time in the back of my head, everything was just like, how do I apply this to myself? So every time something successful happened, I would be like, okay, but how do I do this for comedy?
You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Which it's definitely, like I said, that's a good skill to have. you know, because a lot of, like I said, a lot of comics don't realize how important that is. And it's, yeah, it's a, and not just with marketing, but like other skills that you might have, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there's so many things that you may have skills in your everyday life from like day jobs that can be applied to comedy in some sort of way, you know, like, you know, yeah, you know, you could be, you know, be a business manager, you know, where you have to do accounting and things like that. And it's like, well, that can apply to comedy because 100%. You need to, you know, you got to know business, you know, yeah, things like that.
Like even a random one that I never thought about was when I started working at these like more corporate-y jobs, was like learning how to properly send emails.
You know,
like
that's
really
huge.
Communicate through email and like not wasting someone's time and like talking mm-hmm. to like big organizations and stuff, and kind of like then seeing like behind the scenes, because then I was working in marketing, so then I'm getting emails from like influencers and I'm seeing mm-hmm. how they're pitching themselves and how they're like, you know, what they lay out their emails like and what their graphics and stuff, and I'm like, oh, like I don't, my emails for when I'm booking comedy clubs or booking any venue doesn't look this professional. I should really be thinking about that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. That's, yeah. Professionality in comedy is huge, you know, and it's yeah. not just, you know, there's more to being professional than just showing up on time for a show, you know?
Yeah. Oh,
like
yeah.
Said, like email communication's huge. Yeah. I mean, because it's like really even, how we communicate.
Yeah. Even when, we set this whole thing up to talk. And like our communication before the show, I was like, oh, this is like a real show. This is not like this guy's done it before, you know?
Yeah, believe me, I haven't, I hadn't always done it that way. I've yeah, gone a long yeah, way yeah. with it, but yeah.
Yeah. And I even think about like, cause my show is very like laid back in a lot of ways, my podcast. And I'm like slowly getting like more professional about how I approach things. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's like me and my friends of like anytime I do their podcast where it's like a text message, like be over at 7, you know, like,
yeah, yep. Well, and I've had those where I'm definitely do some informal stuff, but it's like, especially with, you know, people that I know really well, it can be pretty informal. But then when it's people I don't know, like I've never met you before.
Yeah.
So it's like, all right, well, this is how I've been doing it anyway. But part of trying to, it's not just about being professional. It was also about getting organized because yes. so many people like either approached me or I would approach them about doing the podcast and then like setting things up. And then next thing I know, I've got like 5 things scheduled for the podcast. And then I'm like, who the hell did I schedule? What? And now I'm digging through text yeah. messages or Facebook messages and trying to remember who I reached out to or who I didn't. And then this is like, well, now this is way more organized because now I just go, you know, search the email, yeah, do some keywords yeah. and I can find it all.
You know, last year was like, I decided to take my podcast more serious and I was like, I'm going to make this like a real thing. And then that's when I got into like the top 80 on iTunes and I like had like a good pop for a couple of months. And then I do this thing and I do it every year where I go, but I want to get better at it. So I take a break, not announced or anything, just I randomly mm-hmm. stop posting the podcast. And then I'm like, well, I got to work on this thing. And I get like so distracted and then I like almost forget. And then months have gone by and then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I got to post something. And then I start posting again. But like last year I was trying to move into a new podcast studio and then like that didn't work out. And then I got another one going and then that would like slowly trickled. And then I decided to move it into my house. And so like, it's just been like, so like I do that with where it's just up and down of like, I got to get focused. I got to get mm-hmm. like serious about this. And then like actually scheduling guests because you're like, I want it to be weekly. And you're like, well, you got to schedule people every week if you want it to
yeah.
be.
Oh, yeah. When I started this, like I released my episodes very sporadically and I recorded very sporadically. I mean, honestly, the first like 25 episodes are awful as far as quality goes. The guests were great and some of the content that came out of it and the conversations were great. Quality, terrible. I started this with recording audio with the interview mode on my cell phone,
you know,
like no microphones, We might have been at, like, the first episode I did was we were outside of a bar after an open mic in just in a outside of Olympia, Washington, and there's like cars driving by, motorcycles going, like all this stuff that is like the worst for an audio podcast, you know.
Yeah.
But then through the years as the podcast, you know, I realized that, okay, I got something here. I didn't take it as serious at first because it's like, well, we'll try it and see what happens. And then, you know, like I said, then as the years go, I'm like, okay, there's something here, and it's, people are going to take it more serious when you start treating it more serious, you know?
Yeah.
And part of the, one of the first things for me was being consistent. So I would release episodes sporadically, and then I was like, okay, consistency is the thing. So then I started doing, you know, maybe every other week or whatever. And finally I went to once a week. And so now it's been, you know, pretty sporadic or pretty consistent with doing it weekly. Picked a day. That's the day I release on. There's been a couple times when things in the life have happened and I just couldn't get an episode done on time or whatever, you know, because with comedy and stuff, you do have to travel and, you know, whatever. Yeah. So there's just not always enough time to do it. You know, I just took a 2-week break, you know, it wasn't planned. I did it. Now I did post it on the Facebook page eventually where I'm like, hey, I'm, you know, taking a couple weeks off. Well, I took a week off and then I was like, I'm going to take another week off. Like, so I posted that again, but I also released 12 episodes in 1 week. So I was like, there's plenty of content that I know a lot of people haven't probably listened to yet because I was at the World Series of Comedy and I did a whole special thing that week. And I released 12 episodes with 12 different comics from that festival. So it was like, there's plenty of content out there. So taking a couple weeks off, not a big deal.
Do you go to a lot of festivals?
Not necessarily. I mean, a lot of festivals are hard to get into. I know this because I run festivals too. So
okay.
Or I've helped run some festivals. I should say I run a festival now. But I mean, when I can. I mean, it depends on the festival, really. You know, because different festivals have different payoffs. You know, you might. Yeah.
And it's also like, if you've never been to that festival and you're like looking online, sometimes it can be hard where it's like, is this just three people saying it's a festival or is it like an actual festival? You know, there's like that. And then like, like in Arizona, we have Bird City, which is like a wonderful festival, you know, and we have Big Pine and Flagstaff, which is a wonderful festival.
Yep.
So we're like lucky we have two wonderful ones, but it's like, I also know. I hear stories from other comics that live in other states where it's like, not the same, you know, they don't have such an, you know, cause like literally I don't have to leave, you know, I can stay right here and just do two festivals.
Absolutely. Well, it's funny though, because Big Pine started as a sketchy festival because there was a lot of, like, I remember, cause I lived in San Diego at the time and the person trying to get it running was, he was in San Diego.
Really?
And they were, you know, handing out some flyers and trying to get comics to sign up, and some comics signed up and then and registered, paid the fees or whatever. And then, like, if memory serves me right, like, they kind of didn't, like, reply to anybody. It was getting closer to the festival. And then it got real sketchy. Money over here. I mean, that's kind of what happened was exactly what you're saying. It just seemed like it was just somebody trying to get money out of comics or whatever. And and I don't even know if they ever did the first year or how that worked or what happened. Really? I just know a comic friend of mine was really kind of irritated because he had, you know, submitted and they were being real wishy-washy. But now the people who run it now, you know, they took it over from whoever had it before. And it's a fabulous festival.
Yeah. Yeah. The first time I ever went was last year. Cause I'm like never in town. Also, full backstory. I've applied twice in the last like four-ish years in the last some time period. I applied twice, got no's both times. And then I got that follow-up email where they're like, but you can come watch. And, I was always sad because it happens on my birthday and I'm like, it's like, I don't want to go to a thing I didn't get into on my birthday.
You know? Right.
But like, so last year I didn't apply, and I was like, I happened to be in town. I didn't think I was going to be. And I was like, yeah, let's drive up there. So I drove up there, got an Airbnb, and literally it was just like a fun hangout with friends. I was like, I met a few people, but I knew mostly everyone from LA and, you know, all the other cities that were kind of involved. I knew like a lot of the comics. So I was like, oh yeah, this is just a hangout, you know?
Yeah. But, yep. And that's what, those are the kind of festivals that I like. I mean, cause there's some that are competitions, and I've been involved in, you know, festivals that were that. I helped run the San Diego Comedy Festival for the first 5 years. And that's a big competition and whatever and whatnot. Mm. So but the ones that are just like hangouts. So like we run a festival in South Dakota now called Snow Jam, and
okay.
We're, you know, it's not a contest. It's basically a weekend party is what it is. You know, it's we bring in like 30 different comics, and we're raising money for the Special Olympics. So it's also a charity event.
Nice.
And we just have a good time for 3 days. That's what I like about it, because it's exactly what you said. It's like a 3 day hang with a bunch of people. Yeah,
that's what I want to be involved with, because like that's me. Like I'm not here to like win. I'm here to
Yeah, you know. And it alleviates pressure too. Like that's one of the things I noticed with San Diego when I was involved in that festival, is that comics would come, but there wasn't a lot of, unless they already knew each other from their own scenes, there wasn't necessarily a lot of camaraderie, because it was like, oh, these guys are my, you know, these people are my, this is my competition. I don't want to hang out with them. I'm here to win, not to hang out and have fun. And then, you know, so it kind of, I don't know, puts a weird energy out there, and I didn't like that. So like festivals like that where it's like, just go hang out.
Yeah.
Have a good time.
Yeah, that's what I want. I want to like casually meet other people and be like, oh, we're all like-minded. We all like comedy. We just had, you know, now we're at these other, do you guys do it at like one venue, or is it like multiple venues?
We did at multiple venues. We usually have like 3 or 4 venues that we do it. Cause we did like 6 to 8 shows over 3 days. So
nice.
A lot of times we do 2 shows a night, but we would do 1 show at one venue and 1 show at another, but it was usually the same 2 or 3 venues throughout the whole weekend.
That's,
you know,
cool.
We just kind of rotate it. Yeah, and it works. It seems to work out good. And people that have come to the festival and have done it have had a good time. You know, and that's why I know, like, when I submit to festivals and I don't get in, I don't get, you know, sure, it's upsetting to get a rejection, but I'm like, I get it. Because I run a festival. I often joke, I'm like, I don't think I'd get into my own festival. You know, like... like some of these people that we've had, and I'm like, yeah, I don't think I'd get in, you know, if I submitted to this. So I totally get not getting into another one. But
I've done comedy long enough.
Do more.
I'm trying to like I've done comedy long enough where it's like, when I don't get into a festival, I'm like, I was probably not a good fit, because like I know I'm like my own weird type of comedy. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, it probably didn't, there was something about me that they're like, not what we're looking for, you know.
Yep. Which is fine. Well, and that's another thing that I think a lot of comics don't realize is that, yes, you know, in a perfect world, it's about being the funniest, but that's not it. You know, like when festivals producers are putting together a festival and they're bringing in people, and even through submissions and stuff, they have to figure out what is a good fit. You know, it's not just, you know, they have to try to have, you know, they're going to want diversity, and because they're going to want to try to bring in the biggest potential audience that they can. And you're not going to do that having the same 3 people every night, you know, like the same kind of comic. It's going to, you know, only a few people are going to be into that. So they got to try to, like, you know, add variety to it. And
things like
that.
Cover all the bases of like, every type of comedy for everyone to enjoy, so they can have, you're doing like 6 to 8 shows, it's like, you're right. Like, you don't want John Mulaney 6 to 8 times, you know?
Yeah. Oh, and especially like, you know, like with our festival, and I know a lot of other festivals probably do this too, is, you know, we do we sell like 3-day passes too. And that's like one of our, that's like our hottest, kind of our hottest seller, is that, you know, we do a one price. You can get into all the shows, all the events with this VIP badge. And with that, if we had the same shows every day for 3 days in a row, the value of that is, you know, it deflates the value of having that badge. You know?
Yeah. Well, it's so, like, yeah, why would you come to day two? You're like, I saw a day one, you know?
Yeah, exactly. Oh, this is the same thing I saw yesterday. I guess this was a waste of money or whatever, you know? So, yeah. So that's kind of how I look at it, where it's like, yeah, you want to have as much, a lot of different stuff going on, you know, because you're going to end up a lot of the people that buy them 3-day passes, for us anyway, have come to a lot of them shows. Like, they're there at every show, you know, so they're seeing something different every time versus, oh, this is the same thing over and over. Granted, there are a few times where you're going to have a stand-up show where one stand-up comic might be on both shows and they see the same set from that one comic, but there's going to be enough of a variety of other comics that it's not the same show.
Yeah. Exactly. That's fun.
Yeah, it definitely helps. But as far as me doing festivals, I'm trying to get out more, but I'm also, you know, like, I'm trying to be a working comic. And sometimes, you know, it's like, yeah, I get why they have submission fees, but I only have so much money. And it's like, which ones do I want to, you know, apply to? And then it's like, oh, if I do get into a festival, that's a weekend of work I could, you know, I could be making money. Instead, I'm spending money because a lot of festivals don't pay the comics, and they don't pay for lodging or traveling or things like that, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's an investment. I mean, that's how you have to look at it. And that's how, like I said, I went to the World Series of Comedy, and it was an investment for me. Like, it is a competition, but the competition was the furthest thing from my mind. I went because I knew I could network with people. Also knew some other comics that were going to be on there, so I got to hang out with some friends that I don't get to see very often. And they had a lot of great like seminars and workshops and industry Q&A panels and stuff. So I was like, all right, I'm going to actually invest in this festival. I'm going to go out there, spend the whole week, regardless of how I do in the competition, and take in all these seminars. And I was able to do stuff with my podcast and all this stuff. So that ended up being a really good investment for me, because it was like, plus there was a ton of bookers, and not just bookers, but like owners of clubs, like Rick Bronson was there. You had one of the producers of South by Southwest was there, and all these different things like that. So it was like, it was definitely worth it. So that's how I try to look at a festival and to figure out how's it going to benefit me? Is it a good investment or not? Essentially, you know?
Yeah. Or I did the
am
same.
I just looking for a vacation?
Yeah. Which totally at the same time. Great. You know?
Yeah. So that's how I
looked at going to Big Pine, where I was like, yeah, let's just go hang out, have fun. And it was kind of a vacation. And then at the same time, I brought my podcasting equipment and I recorded like 3 podcast episodes with like some friends that now live in LA that were doing the shows. And it was a great time, but it was like, yeah, I was kind of like networking a little bit. I did they had like some like seminars and stuff. So I went to a couple of those and I was like, oh, this is a side of comedy festivals I don't often think about, because I often am thinking about how can I get in? How can I get on these shows? How can these bookers see me? Mm-hmm. And I wasn't really thinking of like, how could I make some podcast episodes, network with people, have my friends introduce me to like people that could be important or, you know, or, or great people in general. And, you know, so it was very kind of eye-opening of like taking it from a different direction instead of like trying to, that's how I look at my whole year is like every weekend is possibly a gig.
Absolutely. This is a potential weekend I could be making money for sure. I'm kind of the same. That's why I basically say I'm going to spend X amount of dollars on submitting to festivals, and it's not a lot. And I kind of, you know, I basically try to do my research to see how it'll benefit if I get in and go, that kind of thing, you know, because the one thing I've realized, especially now, like after doing the World Series of Comedy, and I've did other festivals and I've had, you know, the seminars are really good, but I never really like took them in because a lot of those festivals I was working. So it was like, you know, there were festivals that I was helping with. So I couldn't really like take in the seminars and their benefit. And they're very beneficial. I mean, like I said, I've been doing comedy a little over 10 years and they were very eye-opening and very informative. Even where I was in comedy, I was like, wow, I'm glad I came and did this.
Interesting. You know? Yeah. Yeah. And another side point was like, I went not worrying about performing. And I'm sure that's like a whole nother, cause like, I'm sure when you're like in it performing or like you said, like running it, both of those are like so much of your brain that you're like, you're not really taking in everything.
Yeah. So. Oh, absolutely. And that's a thing too, that I would recommend what you did already. Any comics that are listening, if you live in an area where there's a comedy festival, and whether you get in or not, or you're, you know, you can volunteer to help them because a lot of festivals want those, you know, volunteers or whatever. But even if you don't, take it in, go to the festival and just as a spectator, because you'll meet so many comics. And that's happened, you know, we can only have so many local comics at our festival or whatever. And there's more local comics than there are spots available. And even the comics that don't get in, they'll come hang out at our festival. So they're still involved, you know, and they still get a network with comics from other towns and, you know, meet other comics and you get that networking aspect. So yeah, I definitely think you should, even if you don't get in, go to a festival at least, you know, one time, because it'll be a good time.
Yeah. 100%.
Sure. Yeah. Now getting back into this podcast, kind of went on a tangent on festivals, but that's okay. I like it. I always worry. I gotta be honest. I always worry when I don't know the comics that I'm talking to. I don't know how the conversation will go. Cause sometimes, you know, you just don't have chemistry or whatever. And it's like, oh, is this going to be a short podcast or are we going to actually go for a while? Like that kind of thing. But we've been doing great. We have great chemistry here. So it's great. So I like the tangents. I like that we're still going. But getting back into this, the bumming a bombing, the dreadful feeling you get when you bomb, how long does that typically last for you? And how has that changed over the years?
Oh, okay. Yeah, I obviously when I was younger doing stand-up, it definitely set in for weeks sometimes, maybe months. Like, and I mean that isn't like, like the story I told today, that affected me 100% for a month easily, where I was very much questioning going to open mics again, going out, you know, like I was afraid to leave my house for a month. That's like a very traumatizing bonding. But even when I was younger and like, you know, you get like a guy that heckles you and it, you know, and you can clearly see that the crowd agrees with him. You know, those stick around for a couple of weeks. And then, but now it's like they don't even matter. Like I can bomb. And I think, I'm trying to think of the last time I bombed really hard. I think the last time I bombed really hard, I still thought it was fun. And I was like, yeah, you know, and it was just kind of like, it's just so casual. So like they, you know, basically the next day, I'm not even really thinking about it. Maybe for the day or two, but not after that. So now I think about it as like a growing point and I go, oh, that was a fun or interesting or weird. Cause the one I'm thinking of right now is like, in February, I did a show and the sound guy decided to play with the microphone settings as I was on stage. And he was just like, he added like reverb for like a second or something. Like he was very like, he didn't know what he was doing or something. And he like tried to get it back. And then I had like a little bit of banter with him. And I thought it was really fun bantering with him. He was like talking back to me, but not over a microphone. And, you know, but the crowd was just kind of like, this is like, they were upset that they're like, how unprofessional about this microphone.
Oh, yeah. You know, like, yeah.
And so the crowd kind of was like just out of it. And then like, I couldn't really get them back after that. They were just kind of like, I just, you know, and it was just a very okay bombing, you know? And, but I walked away from that being like, that was a weird, fun experience. It was different. It took me out of my brain for a minute.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes too, I feel, I don't know how it is for you, but I feel like when you are bombing and you know it, sometimes it's best just to have fun with it.
Yeah.
You know, and just make the best of it for you.
Yeah. I used to do this thing, where like, if I lost them and I knew I was bombing, I was like, how far deep can I dig this hole? And I used to just go that approach where I was like very against them, where I was like, no, I'm going to dig it deeper. You really don't like that? I have a joke that's even worse than that. You know, and I'd like really go in. And then at some turning point where I was like, that's not the right approach. It's not me versus them. We're all here to have fun, you know? Mm-hmm. And so later in life, it became like more of like, how can I dig out of this in a fun way, though, without just pulling the parachute or the closing joke that I've had for 5 years. Like, what's a, like, you know, let's feel out the room. Like, what is it that you don't like? Was it the microphone thing, or was it something I said, or, you know, or even like a fun thing I've done recently where like I was in the middle of a joke in Tucson and I was like, you know what? I don't think you guys are liking this. And I just stopped and I was like, I don't think this is for you guys. And there was like a little bit of laughter and I go, you know what? I'm going to get off this stage and we're going to come back up and let's just start over. And I'm like halfway through my set and they're like, okay. You know, and then I'm like, I need you guys to like clap, you know? And so then I laughed and then I like came back and then I just like did like a summary of each joke that I did. I was like, you know, I'm Zach, like just like literally starting from beginning, just slowly moving through, getting back to where I was. And it like totally just brought the room back, you know, really like woke them up. And they're like, that's not what we expected. You know, and I'm like, so I'm trying to like do things like that more of just like, mm-hmm. you know, like what's an interesting in the moment now thing.
Yeah. And that's huge. I think being in the moment, that's something I've definitely been trying to emphasize on myself is trying to be more in the moment when I'm on stage, you know, be present, you know,
yeah.
and try to make it an experience for that audience.
Yeah. 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 I got very ill about over a year ago now and I couldn't do stand up for a bit. And so I was going to shows knowing that I physically couldn't perform because I was ill. And it was like a real wake up call of like being like in comedy and being like around comedy. And it made me really think more about like being in my now and being like present in these jokes and like reading the room more. And so like in the last year, I've kind of like, that's been like a main focus for me too, is just like growing on that of sure. I can hit the punchlines, but like, how do I really bring this to like an entertaining show? Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Well, and then when you do have a bad set, what do you do to try to analyze, to figure out what happened and how you can prevent it or get better?
Yeah. What I do is like, so I record all my sets on my phone anyways. So I'm always listening back. And then what I started doing is in my notebook, I'll write my set list and then I draw a line and then I put the word notes and then I save the second half of the page for notes. And so when I'm going back and listening to my set list, I'll write down not always notes about the show, but like 1 minute in, someone dropped a plate, you know, 2 minutes in,
oh.
I
compare
to. I write in like interesting things or like listening to how do I feel like I'm in it? Do I feel like I'm phoning this in? Do I, you know, I'm like visiting all the signs as an audience member and I'm no longer like just critiquing the jokes. I'm being like, okay, like, did I go too quickly, too fast? Like I'm really taking it apart. So when I bomb, I maybe like if I'm at the show and I have my notebook in front of me and the guy in front of me says something terrible or something happens ahead of time that's like upsetting the show, I put that in the notes where I'm like, hey, this may not also just be me, you know, and I'm making these notes and being very like mindful of like, you know, because it's as easy as at a comedy club where it's like it could be too cold in there and they're just not mm-hmm. comfortable. So I write
absolutely.
That down where I write down too cold in venue. Or the host said something horrible before I went on stage, you know, like I write all that stuff in. So then when I'm listening back and I go, what did I do wrong? I'm also going, oh yeah, the host brought me on stage with a really terrible introduction that I had to work out of, and maybe I worked out of it in the wrong way. Maybe I took the wrong approach right away, or kind of like listening to like, oh, they really liked that funny, that silly joke, and then I ignored that and still just went into stories and didn't do more silly whatever, you know. Like I pay attention to the approaches I take after, and you know, and often like, do I sound angry, or like I'm like reminded that these people don't know me, so like they don't know if I'm being playfully angry or playfully anything, you know. They don't know my personality, so I'm like always taking that into note too when I'm looking over a bombing.
Mm-hmm. No, those are really good. That's a really good way to do it. Taking notes on the, you know, other things like the environment and things that are happening, like those little things, because those little things do matter. That's, you know, if you, because one of the things that I find in comedy that really can derail a set is when the host gives you a bad intro. A lot of times that happens at like private corporate events where the person introducing you isn't an MC. They don't do this professionally. Yes. And it's not like it's their fault because they, you know, they just don't know. You know what I mean? Like they don't know what they're doing. And then they ultimately end up giving you this terrible intro. And then that just gives you a whole awkward start. It makes it hard to like try to come back from that. So that's a really good observation on note taking. Because that's really good. That, in fact, I'm probably going to start doing that myself, because I already do. You know, I try to take notes a lot of times. I'm trying to get better at listening back to my sets. I don't always do that, but what I do is often I take notes after the show of how my set went, you know, I felt, you know, different things like that. But adding those notes, I think, is huge, because, you know, that's really important information, because there's sometimes like if something happens, it's not your jokes. You just can't come back from.
Well, we've all done the set where like a fight broke out earlier and every comic has talked about it. And so not only has it like happened and then everyone's dwelled on it, and then maybe I went up and I made two jokes about it, and they're like, we get it, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's like, it could be as simple as that, where I'm like, I lost them as soon as I joined the club of making fun of the fight, or, you know, or maybe they just are like, can we just end this comedy show because the fight really upset me? You know, like you just, it's so many things like that. It really started with, I started that note thing with like my vibe on stage when I was thinking about like my now and being like, is my energy performance level, or am I just like working through this? Does it sound like I've said it before? And like, I have some really like high energy bits, and I noticed if I don't 100% commit, they just don't connect at all. And so it's like, I'm really trying to focus on like making sure that, and sometimes it is where I'm like, I have to be, maybe I'm really high energy and that's not what they want that night. So I'm like trying to like bob and weave and like, how do I do this joke and not get to 100% and I get it to like 70% energy, but it still feels the same. So that's like, it started with that. And then I was all like me making notes of like what the room was and stuff, kind of like evolved from that.
Mm-hmm. No, that's great. That's great. That's good stuff there. Do you have a pre-show tradition or ritual? Something you do have to do before every show? I'm gonna take a guess here. Is it drink coffee?
That's just it's how I summon the comedy gods every morning. It is. If I don't have coffee, who am I? I scream to the sky. Before a show, something I noticed that I should be doing more and I'm trying to get better at is listening to like hypey music, like really like listening on the drive there, or like kind of taking advice from my improv friends where they do fun games and stuff, you know, like like doing something where it's just like me, like usually it's just me listening to like Biggie in the car on the way there, or like listening to a rap album of some sort, and just really kind of like getting my energy up, because my energy on stage is not the same as who I am as a person. So I can be very like calm, quiet throughout the whole day. And then I have to get on stage and not try to be calm, quiet. And So a lot of that, like running through my set list, writing the set list, making the notes, all that has kind of become a tradition, a ritual before I do the, before I do shows.
Oh, so. Right on. What's been your favorite show that you've done so far?
Ever?
Ever. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I never really thought about that. That's a tough one.
You know why it's so tough? Because as comics, we think about all the worst shows more than we do the good ones. It's like you have a good show and you're like, yeah, that was great. And in the moment, you're like, this was the best show ever. And then the next day, you're just, you forget about that good show and you go do another show and it might be good or it might be bad. But then you get a really bad bomb and you're like, you just dwell on that. You're just like, yeah. What happened?
Yeah. Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah, these last 2 days, I was like, in the shower thinking about like, what's my worst bomb? You know, my brain's like, I got a lot of them. And, you know, I wasn't going, what am I grateful for? I immediately, two shows come to mind. And one is just because it was like, not that long ago, I headlined the Bridge Improv Theater, Tempe. And that show was oddly perfect, and that's why it really sticks out. It's like I booked it. I was the headliner. I had my good friend Savannah Hernandez feature, and then my good friend Lou hosted, and it was all like they did 15 to 20 each, and then I did my time, and it was just oddly perfect, where like everyone mm-hmm. went well. The show was filled with people, and my hour felt prepared and nice, and so like that one was like just. Like I was almost like suspicious the whole night. I'm like, when's this taking a turn? That one comes to mind, but I think probably when I headlined the Rebel Lounge last year, and it was like it's a big room. It's probably one of the bigger rooms I've like headlined in general. And that was like I really felt my hour come together that I was working on. And I had 40 minutes that I wrote last year that I was like really liking, and everyone on the show did great. And it was just, you know, and we sold out of merch, and every end of it was perfect. Like it was just like if it was a movie, it would have ended with a high five and credits rolling, you know, it was great.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's awesome. That's beautiful. Those are the shows we need to try to dwell on more. But then I wouldn't have a podcast. Everybody
would
forget.
Yeah. Another reason I was taken a shock, because I was like, you want to hear about a good thing?
I try to end on a positive note. That's what's going on here. I got one more thing I like to do. But before I do that, I just want to ask real quick, since you mm-hmm. do marketing and stuff and for your regular job and stuff, or you did, what would be one tip that you would give comics for marketing? I know, I'm sure you have one, but I mean, I'm sure you have more than one. You probably have plenty, but.
Yeah, I'll give you like a general thing that kind of works for everything. This is a little old school, but people used to be really scared of putting their stuff online. Mm-hmm. Don't be scared of putting your stand up online, unless it's bad. But
that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, that's advice. But also just like, comics often fall into this idea that like they're too cool for something, they're too cool for marketing in some way, or having a nice website's like too cool, or you know, like you just hear these things from people who are like, I'm just out here grinding, and you're like, yeah man, but like you wouldn't have to grind as hard if you had like a really nice website. Or like what I really want to say is to hop onto the new trends, like something like TikTok, where it's mm-hmm. like, yeah, I'm on TikTok. There's nothing wrong with being on TikTok. It's okay.
I'm guilty of that. I'm very guilty of that. When this pandemic first hit, I kept making jokes about not being bored enough to be on TikTok, like, and just totally just making fun of TikTok and whatever. Yeah. And then I had a comic on here who he was already, you know, he's the TV and stuff, but he ended up setting up a TikTok and he blew up on TikTok. And he was on this podcast and we were talking about it. And like after our conversation, I was like, okay, he's right. I should set this up. And then I did.
Yeah.
And then I immediately tweeted, I'm an idiot.
Yeah. Two things two things that I like when I had my marketing jobs, I always like anytime I had, I felt like I was convincing like a coworker or a client or anyone about like something. I was like, you know who thought they were too cool for anything was Blockbuster. They had a chance to buy Netflix when the Netflix was very small. And they go, nah, no one's going to do that internet thing. We're doing great. And then the other one that I like using for comics is MySpace. Everyone left MySpace to go to Facebook and everyone's like, I'll stick it out on MySpace. This is fine. You know, and then now we're all on Facebook. And I'm seeing that with Instagram, where Instagram's really dying and the analytics are just not there and the algorithm is trash, you know, and it's just like, it's like a wake up call this year of being like, yeah, it's time to move on to something. And we're all slowly moving to TikTok. And a lot of people are being like resistant of this idea. And I'm like, dude, if you build the fan base now on TikTok, when everyone does finally do that jump, you're going to be so far ahead of everyone else. In the next 2 years, when we're at, because it used to be people, now everyone's like, what's your Instagram? When you're at like open mics, it's going to be, what's your TikTok very soon.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And it's
I was going to say, the comic that I was talking to, too, like, I listened to his podcast and people have started coming to his shows because they found him on TikTok. Yeah. So, like, that means his return on his investment as far as, like, posting content is paying off. Because ultimately, as comics, that's what we want. We want we want to be a draw. And so if people are finding us online and then they want to come see us live, that's the ultimate payoff. That's the whole point.
Yeah, that's the whole goal. That's the only reason I have social media. You know what I mean? It's like, so hopefully you think I am enjoyable enough that you buy a ticket and come see me live, because that's really what I want to do. I don't really want to be Instagram famous or anything. I just want you to come see me perform, you know? And it's like, what's wrong with that? You know, like, I'm just be very open about it and just make the content for those people then, you know? So yeah. It's funny to me that like we're watching this happen in history over and over again, and people are still like, yeah, but I'm just gonna hang out, you know.
History repeats itself, they say.
Yeah, 100%.
And it definitely, you can definitely see it. All right. Well, the last thing I like to do, a fun thing called pick a number. You're going to pick a number between 1 and 20, and I'm going to ask you a corresponding question. It may be comedy related or it may not.
Okay. 16.
16. All right. On an average, how many times a week do you hurt yourself trying to dance in the shower?
Oh, man. just in the week? Or are we doing...
That's what it says. Just in a week. How many times in a week?
I have a calculator around here. I am... in the shower. You know, I'm not a big dancer in the shower, but do I hurt myself getting in the shower? Almost every time. I'm that guy that slides in and I go, I should really put something down there. You know?
I should really put a mat down in this.
I should put something, you know, stops this being so slippery.
Or safety handle or something to hold on to.
But I don't know. Do you do your bits in the shower? I do. I'll do bits in the shower. I'll be like thinking about a joke.
I'm always thinking about my bits. Yeah, I'm always doing that.
And you shower at a friend's house, and he's like, is everything okay in there? And
you're like, oh, no, yeah.
I'm working on it. I'm working on
it. Don't worry.
It will be better.
Oh, fantastic. All right, well, where can people find you? Go ahead and plug your social media.
Well, my TikTok is Zach Lyman Podcast. You can find me there. And then Instagram is also Zach Lyman Podcast. And if you get lost at all, just go to ZachLymanPodcast.com. There's all the stuff you need there. So,
perfect. All right. Well, thanks for doing this.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
The Art of Bombing is a Blitzed Entertainment production, hosted and produced by me, Dan Bublitz Jr. The stand-up spotlight bumper was produced by Joe Nicola Music. The Art of Bombing theme music was written and performed by John Holt. All other music was used under Creative Commons licensing. All stand-up audio clips were used with permission from the comedians. You can help the podcast by subscribing, leaving a 5-star rating, and a review. For previous episodes, merch, blogs, and more, please visit theartofbombingpod.com. And remember, stay safe!
so you can live to love.